Hey, from everybody.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm a guest this time.
Yeah, hey, everybody in podcast land. Welcome to UCB Digital Podcast.
I'm your host.
We have a very special episode today. Todd Bieber is here.
Nate Russell is here.
Yep. And we're going to just interview each other and battle it out for who is the actual host of this podcast. So we'll see how this goes.
Tweet in and let us know who you want to be the host at the end
live
of this.
Live tweet this thing.
Yeah.
A couple months ago, I came on this podcast and said, Todd Bieber is not, you know, when I first started hosting this, being like, Todd Bieber's not here today. And you'll find out why on the next podcast. And that was like 8 months ago. So this is finally the cliffhanger coming to an end of where did Todd Bieber go and what's he been working on? And we're ready to unveil all of that great stuff on this podcast exclusively. Although anybody who knows you knows already.
Yeah, and probably everybody who's listening to this knows me.
Yeah. So we're like right now, 1 week away from the premiere of Todd's feature directorial debut at a major festival for a documentary called Thank You, Dell.
The story of the Dell Close Marathon.
There you go. And it's Thank You, comma, Dell.
Yes.
The story of the Dell Close Marathon. So that's really exciting, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. 3 years in the making.
I know.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to wait to have this conversation until the sort of like dust had settled on the documentary, because it was sort of like the sort of thing where it's like for a while you can't really talk about it, and you also don't fully know, and like in the throes of really trying to get this thing like to the finish line, and here we are, we're at the finish line. So you've already sent the tape down.
Sent it in.
It's gone. Is it an HD cam tape?
No, it is a DCP tape.
It is. Ooh, baby.
You're the only one who knows what that means.
Is it digital cinema projection?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I found out in September that we got into South By.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell anyone until February. February?
Yeah.
So that was I was excited for months before it actually was announced. So it's nice to tell people now.
It's like, I equate that to like, maybe this is crude, but to me, what that reminds me of is like, cause I have a daughter who's like 2 years old. And for like the first like 3 months of pregnancy, you don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And so you walk around with this great news that you want to talk to people about. And it's like a big thing, especially when it's your first, which this is your first baby coming into the world. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, you want to talk about it, but it's like, it's not safe to do it. It's not smart to do it. It's like, there's a lot of reasons not to.
Yeah.
But it's like, kind of wears at you. You know what I mean? Like being like, I want to talk about this thing. And when you can, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you feeling about like the process of going to the festival? Cause it's like releasing at a festival is it's kind of intense. You're looking to sell, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We just signed with, Synetic to be the sales partner, and they did, what have they done? They've done Exit Through the Gift Shop. They've done Little Miss Sunshine. They've done big films. So I'm very excited that somebody who's got a good rep is...
Sure. Great track record.
Yeah, is repping our film. And it's been really informative to sit with them and talk about the process.
Sure.
Because as much as I've made stuff, selling stuff after the fact is new to me. And selling stuff beforehand is what I'm used to.
Yeah.
And that's a hard process. But now it's like a finished thing that I have to take out with these new partners who haven't worked on it for 3 years with me, and it's exciting. It's really cool to learn about that. And it's not just about, there's things that like you'd think would be intuitive about releasing your film at a festival.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be like, oh, we should get as much press as possible.
Necessarily true.
No, not at all. Because if you get, not that we, I hope we get this sometime, but like if you're on the front page of the New York Times for South By, great. That's awesome for you, for the film, for publicity, but not as cool for or as enticing for a distributor, because they know
they're not going to do that again.
Yeah. And when
you
they
get
release
in the Times
film,
once.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like if you're going to put the movie out on VOD or theaters, you do not want those articles out right now. So it's a balance of like getting enough press and quote unquote buzz that gets people excited enough to buy the movie, but not enough to maybe attract the larger audience quite yet.
Quite yet.
Yeah.
Similarly, it's also a game of like, so you're doing like, so this is a premiere, this is world premiere, this is North American premiere, this is United States premiere, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's also technically Texas premiere, right? Yeah. All those sort of like distinctions that for other festivals makes it less enticing to them too. But you're also playing a funny game of when you want to have those other premieres, you want to have big things sort of like in the back, you know, in the sort of like, I guess like bullets in the chamber of like ways to promote it beyond just the first festival that are strategic, that are like maybe like European or like outside of the United States, but still in North America, like those type of like opportunities, but not so many that the distributors again are like, well, if
it's played
this is going to be
Chicago,
this is going to be playing forever around the country and around the world, then why are people going to pay for it through our release strategy?
We had a whole strategy set up to submit to festivals throughout the year, and what we've learned is that we've submitted to a handful. We're scheduled to play at four. Two I can talk about, which is South By and Hot Docs.
Yeah.
Two I can't talk because they haven't been announced yet. But
sure.
We're basically, with the exception of things that we submitted to already, going to put a little bit of a hold on it because of this very reason. And like, I want the best life for the film, and my instinct is to just go and show it, and like I want to show it, I want to be at these places, but also like knowing that like what's best for the overall story is like keeping those things in balance is new and exciting, and you're catching me right in the process of learning
it.
Yeah,
that's great. That's really exciting, man. So let's like I want to dig into that. Let me just set the table like slightly a little bit more for this conversation so that everybody out there is super clear on like what, like, you know, what we're talking about and why. So for those who don't know, Todd was UCB Comedy for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Todd started as a video intern when there was no like UCB Comedy production department. There's the famous story of Todd at a gray cart.
Yeah.
Right. With an editing machine.
Where's that cart?
The cart, actually, I think Ben is on the cart in the next room. So the cart is still here. It lives
good.
On. And as this place developed, became the first creative director of UCB Comedy, helped to expand the community and the sort of production side of UCB Theater and what has become sort of UCB Comedy as a living, breathing sort of production entity. And as part of that, that's where this documentary came from.
Yeah.
Right? Was part of... it was produced here internally at UCB Comedy, a project that started shooting, 2012?
Yeah, what is the year? Is it? I think so, 2012. It was
maybe
DCM
15?
15, so it might have been 2013.
Oh, okay, so it was 2013.
Yes, 3 years ago that we started.
So a project that you worked on a long time while also fulfilling a lot of other responsibilities around here.
Yeah.
And then kind of simultaneously to the acceptance was about the time that you...
Left
UCB onto other pastures, which we'll get into.
Yeah.
But also simultaneously still working at UCB in the capacity of like directing this project and needing to sort of like be that shepherd for it to get it to the finish line.
Yeah.
Which is where we are today. So there's a lot that we can unpack in this conversation. And I think that sort of like landing in this place of like the excitement of this experience is really interesting because you're a huge advocate for the digital space.
Yeah.
Right?
I am. Yeah.
Like, and working in a way that, and I don't know, I've started using this phrase, platform agnosticism.
Yeah, I love, that's definitely who I am, platform agnostic.
I love that phrase because it's like, I completely agree with, you and I are aligned in that way, where it's like, I don't care so much about platform as much as I do about like, what's the right vehicle for the idea.
Yeah.
Right.
I have some stipulations to this that I will add at some point, though. But you want to talk about it now?
Sure. Yeah.
Let me tell, because people who don't know what this documentary is about might be curious what it's about. Can I give it to you? So the documentary is called Thank You, Dell, The Story of the Douglas Marathon, which is pretty much the synopsis in the title.
Yeah.
You know, trying to lay out the game, you know, UCB,
Game in the title. Get them to click on it.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. But it is the story of Del Close, the mentor to the Upright Citizens Brigade, and on his deathbed, he basically asked the Upright Citizens Brigade to continue the work that he created. Del Close is the mentor for everybody from like Belushi, Bill Murray, Chris Farley, Gilda Radner, Amy Poehler, Mike Myers. He was huge in comedy, but nobody knows who he is. And the last group that he mentored were the Upright Citizens Brigade. And this examines both who is Dell? Who is this man?
Mm-hmm.
And how has the UCB fulfilled their promise to their mentor?
Yeah.
So we look at the Del Close Marathon. We look at Del Close Man. And we also follow a brand new improv team as they're exploring this world for the first time. We kind of see all of this stuff through that lens.
Yeah. And also, like, this project has also very much evolved, too. Like, that wasn't necessarily what it was conceived of at the beginning.
Exactly.
Which is great that you sort of, like, yeah, you find the story, like, as sort of, like,
yeah,
the reality of, like, your of, like, the footage, like, comes in.
Yeah.
Which is great. And that's really exciting. Here's what's interesting. Like, right now, a big hook of the documentary is, like, nobody knows who Dell is.
Yes.
You're killing that storyline if this thing does really well, right?
Yeah, that's true.
the exposing him to as wide an audience as possible, he'll
be known.
He'll be known.
That would be great.
So yeah, you'll end that storyline.
Hopefully, by the time the documentary comes out, we'll have to change the tagline.
Yeah,
yeah.
You all know Dell already.
Yeah,
is what it would
but
be
you
called.
Didn't before.
Yeah, that's cool. So, but I guess to come back to this transition. Like, this is you, Mr. Digital, Mr. Platform Agnosticism,
mm-hmm.
working in what is essentially a very traditional medium, which is a documentary that's going to a film festival in a physical location,
yeah.
looking for a distribution that is
potentially
probably traditional.
Yeah.
And so what has that process been like for you working in that way?
Well,
has that changed your, yeah.
Because I'm platform agnostic, it hasn't.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm platform agnostic, I think what's best for the story that's being told is the best platform. So it doesn't mean that I'm anti movie theaters or traditional platforms. It just means that I don't subscribe to the notion that that's the only way.
Sure.
So I'm excited to go to the theaters because I think this is a project that is best seen in a group of people with a group of people, whether it's on like. VOD, like in a room with five people or mm-hmm. in a theater, I think you're going to experience this the best way through that platform. And that's the way I made it. Whereas I'm working on a short form thing, a 24 episodes for Above Average and Verizon right now. And those are under 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they have text presented in a different way. They have the story presented in a much different way. But like platform agnostic doesn't mean I'm anti-traditional. I think it just means that, like, when I make something, I try and cater it to where I think it would work best.
Sure.
So I'm excited to get to venture into that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my next project might be a web series. It is a web series, actually. And I don't feel like that's a step backwards in any way.
Sure.
And that, whereas I think that people who are not platform agnostic think that that's a step backwards, or they think it's like a sidestep or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like.
They see it as building blocks. Like, I'll do this for a while in service of making a leap
to
something bigger where I will not go back. But I think even people who at this point have worked for a long time in a more traditional medium are finding themselves working, you know, starting to see the digital space and short form space as more. I mean, the Emmys, yesterday just came out with.
Yeah,
they're going to be releasing awards for short form content. I mean, we're seeing a change in the way that short form and the way that digital platforms are being viewed by the industry at large because of the power of their reach.
And if you look at like Louis,
mm-hmm.
talk about someone who's definitely platform agnostic. You know, like the truth is like, you know, I watched a bunch of my favorite filmmakers and I saw how they succeed. And you read like something like. Easy Rider and Raging Bulls, which is one of my favorite books, and you get to see how 70s cinema, who I admire greatly, changed the way movies were made.
Yeah.
And I think we're in a very similar position, and we aren't going to do the same thing that they did in the 1970s because it's 40 fucking years later. And so to limit ourselves and say, like, how are people consuming and watching shit? And that's a very, like, businessy way of saying it, but like at the end of the day, I'm like, I want to tell stories.
Yeah.
And I want to tell stories that people relate to. And I want them to understand them and comprehend them and feel something when they're done with it. And I don't think that that's exclusive to a television screen or a movie theater.
Yes.
And I think that, like, that was maybe a more unpopular opinion 2 or 3 years ago.
Sure.
And now I think everybody would probably listen to this podcast and be like, yeah, of course, you're not saying anything I don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that maybe. When
a couple
I said
years
ago,
yeah.
people were like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't believe it.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? You know what I've noticed in the last couple of months is there were like two announcements that happened. Like this was maybe like 2 weeks ago. And they happened like right in succession. And it was True TV and History buying or creating a block of on-air short form content.
Mm-hmm.
And History Channels in particular was the big headline of it was Dan Harmon sells short form series, right? Mm-hmm. And where I'm excited by that, where I think that is going, my sort of like, and this is, I don't know, this is just like my view on this, is that for a while, big traditional media companies and people who have that platform in a traditional way looked at digital as something either to spend no money on mm-hmm. or to like sort of like not really care about, right?
Or maybe to promote.
Or to promote their long form stuff.
Yes.
And where I think that is, and that's always been hard. And then for a little while, it was like, do stuff for us digitally, and then we'll co-opt it and put it on our air too. But that got them in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like then they weren't doing it at standards for broadcast and they were like moving it that way. And it was sort of like a dicey area. And so both of those channels now have this block of late night short form content. And I think it's so that they are built in broadcast quality, excellent, top of the line talent, like great stuff, right? Like premium on content that they can break apart and put on their YouTube site
mm-hmm.
and attract audiences to their more traditional space. So you're seeing this funny reverse engineering of we're going to do stuff at broadcast standard,
mm-hmm.
but then we're going to break it apart and see if it has success digitally as a way of like, you know, dipping our toes into that sort of space and being able to use it across platforms themselves. And the Dan Harmon stuff is coming out that way. It's like you'll see one. Like I've never been to History Channel's YouTube page until that series came out. And now I've watched, you know, now I've been there and like, I know more about what History Channel does.
Yeah.
So it's like a weird sort of reverse generation of like a focus from the industry on short form, which I think is cool.
But you're getting a little older, so you're going to fall into history's demographic.
Yeah, pretty soon, right?
Pretty soon anyway. So it just makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, speaking to my generation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Those of us who remember the first Iraq War.
Desert Shield.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's cool. Well, I guess let me ask you this. How did you come to be such an advocate for that platform agnosticism? I imagine that like you also like worked in it for a while, like exclusively. What you were doing here, especially when you first started, was all short form sketch comedy for at that time UCBcomedy.com.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So how did that sort of inform your opinions about this sort of approach to work?
Well, I think before I was here, I was at The Onion and I worked at The Onion and the Onion News Network. And my role in The Onion News Network, it's on my resume and whatnot, but to be honest, it was not that creative of a role. But I got to see the inner workings of what I think was a pioneer in like platform agnostic approach to creating stuff. The stuff that they were making, they treated with the same thought and care that you would see of a high-budget feature film. And when you watched their stuff, it's amazing. It's really well thought out. It's overwritten. It's dense. It looks filmic. It looks and so seeing that stuff and then seeing and me enjoying that, both to be part of the process and to just enjoying it like as a viewer,
mm-hmm.
I think that's where I first started to see like we don't have to treat this like it's an ancillary material.
Mm-hmm.
That we can say something important and funny and good and it can be relevant and say more than maybe a half-hour television show. And I think the two-minute Onion videos accomplished that. And just seeing that, like, if you treat it with, like, respect, then it gets the respect. And I think that's where I think I started. And that was now 8 years ago that stuff, I was there. And I still think that, like, now everybody else is just catching up to where they were 8 years ago. And I think even The Onion now it has changed their strategy. And they aren't making the same type of stuff that they were.
Sure.
I still love The Onion, but it's like it's different. I think from a business point of view, it wasn't practical to do what they were doing back then
because
they couldn't find the sponsors because the sponsors weren't there and the advertising wasn't there to support the level of production that they were doing.
Right.
And now it is. So I think you're seeing a lot more of that type of stuff.
Sure.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and they've also evolved in terms of their approach too. And like that's what Clickhole is to a large extent. It's like we're seeing a change, and they were sort of like ahead of that parody as well, right? It was like using the platform to parody something that's also actively like even stuff that's like BuzzFeed is in a comedy space a lot of times. And the fact that they're able to parody that and we're on it like what now, like 2 or 3 years ago?
And I can't believe it sustained it, because if you told me that you're going to make a full-time website that was dedicated to parodying BuzzFeed, I would not. I would have said, like, that's two videos, dude.
Yeah.
You can't sustain that. But they do. It's really funny. And,
yeah. But they're looking at that type of journalism in the same way that The Onion was, what it was for print.
Yeah.
Like to me, The Onion, like, and now we're totally devolving from talking about you, but to me, The Onion is at, like, back in the day, like, I remember, like, being in college and picking up the paper version of it. You know what I mean? And to me, that was such a cool delivery system for that type of parody, because it was in that tactile way of the format that it was parodying.
Yes.
And so in a way, the reason why I think Clickhole wound up being sustainable thus far, and who knows if that changes, is because it's in that same sort of like genre space where, you know, people I'm sure mislink that stuff on Facebook all the time.
Yes.
You know, like thinking that it's real.
Yeah. And I think that like, because paper doesn't exist, and because
paper doesn't exist anymore,
we don't consume media necessarily. We don't. There's the morning show stuff was awesome, but that's not how we consume it, so it doesn't feel as inherent to like, whatever. Yeah, it is about, and this platform agnostic is about knowing what you're doing, and like, you're not gonna make a feature film, parody of BuzzFeed.
Sure,
you're not gonna go to the movie to see that. And so why you'd go with what makes the most sense.
And that's also probably why you're seeing even those platforms. Like, that's why there's so much more of the movie space, right? It's becoming more centralized. The movie theater space is becoming more about blockbuster, celebrity, and sequel and pre-existing IP.
Yeah.
And it's because, again, in a more diverse media environment, that's what you go to the movies for.
You go for spectacle. You go for an amusement ride.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's a place for that.
Yeah.
And like, I'm also of the mind, like, as somebody who doesn't like who agrees with this philosophy of like the platform is not as interesting to me as like what the story is.
Yeah.
I think that movie is always going to exist. Mm-hmm. When people say movie's going to go away, I'm like, no.
No.
The iPhone's not going to kill the movie, because the movie is about larger than life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something so rewarding about the experience of sitting in a dark room and looking at a huge screen and listening to that surround sound. It's like there's something so rewarding about that as a person that the internet's never going to take that away. I might do it less than we did, you know, like high school kids might not go every Friday the way that like I did. You know what I mean? But like,
and you're not going to see indie films. Like, I worked before I moved to New York, I worked for 5 years at an independent movie theater.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to watch every single indie feature that was in Sundance at that theater.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that those things will end up at that theater anymore.
Yeah.
I think even that theater is shifting to the Oscar winners, not the Sundance winners, because VOD, video on demand, like Hulu, Netflix, Amazon,
Vimeo,
iTunes, that type of stuff is where that stuff's going to live.
Yeah.
And I even think to a greater extent, we're seeing a group of filmmakers come up, not making Sundance movies, but making web content. And that's how they're cutting their teeth and moving on to different things.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for me, I tried for years to do like the short film to go to Sundance, South by Southwest, all that stuff. And now I have a feature in, but like, the reason I got good at what I like, or better at what I'm doing, and was able to have the project that I have in there now, wasn't because of short films, and it wasn't because of the festival run. It was because of a newer platform to reach people.
Yeah.
So, YouTube.
What, taking that philosophy into mind, and now here you are, somebody who is as of a week from today going to be a director with a feature documentary in a major film festival, looking for traditional or even non-traditional, but possibly seeking traditional distribution. Mm-hmm. For you, what is the, like, how does that fit into the trajectory of how you see your career going? Like, for you, where is, we've said this many times before together, Todd. What's the top of the mountain for you?
What's the top of the mountain?
What's the top of the mountain?
Yeah, that is a question.
But I mean, where are you going? Like for you, as somebody who says, I don't care about platform, like, what's the building blocks? Or is it just about the work that's in front of you today?
That's a good question. And I'm glad we've asked it before. mm-hmm. The top of the mountain for me, yeah, you know, someone over Christmas, fuck, I shouldn't even say this because it sounds like a fucking egomaniac. So I'll be self-deprecating and say, like, someone said to me over Christmas break when I was back home in Pennsylvania, like, this is going to be your year, Todd. You're going to finally make it. And I was like, that was so nice of them. They're so sweet of them. What they don't know is that I made it years ago. Doesn't mean I'm a household name.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that I'm like getting millions. It means that I am able to survive as someone who gets to create almost every day. And so what's the top of the mountain for me? I don't know. Being happy, you know, sustaining that the idea that I get to keep on doing what I'm doing. That's more interesting to me. I don't need, like, do I want to get to make a film on the level of J.J. Abrams? I think that would be fucking rad.
Yeah.
But I'd also be, like, pretty content to keep telling my stories if people are interested in hearing what I have to say.
Yeah.
On a level, and I get to do that for a living. That sounds like a pretty good mountain to be living on.
Yeah.
If it's a hill compared to some people's mountains, fuck, great. I don't give a shit. Like, and if I end up on a bigger mountain, great. I got there because I did it on my terms. Which reminds me, this whole metaphor leads into another metaphor that I was just talking about.
Okay.
Totally unrelated.
Uh-huh.
But maybe totally related. Tessa, our friend Tessa, who's the editor here at UCB, who is one of the editors on the documentary, we're headed to South By. There's all these great panels there, and I love panels. I eat up panels. I love them. And I got to see the guys from the Lego guys and Will Forte, and they made The Last Man on Earth together. Uh-huh. Their names are slipping my mind. They're amazing, and I'm huge fans of them. But, like, one of the things they talked about was hills and mountains. And the advice that they gave that I will pass along that I've tried to live since I've heard it in the last year is to die on your mountain, die on your hill. And what they meant by that was, like, it's so hard to do anything in this industry. It's so hard to get anything made or produced or finished or seen by the public. And people are going to push you to their mountain. Or say, like, no, take these notes and do it this way. Mm. Cast this person. Yeah. Rewrite it this way. Do it this way. And what the advice that they gave was to stop taking that advice. And they said as soon as they stopped doing that, as soon as they started dying on their mountain, they said we had an equal number of projects die because most things die.
Yeah.
But they felt a lot more proud, and they started to create their voice and their ability to be like, this is who we are. You don't come to us to just have someone fulfill your mountain. You come to us because this is what we represent.
Sure.
And I think that, like, that is my mountain, to be able to start dying on my mountain a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like great advice. I also take that with a slight, like, I also, like, think that there also sounds to me, and also knowing you, that there is a balance, though, of wanting to be on your mountain, but also, like, working well with others, too, because it's a collaborative medium. So, like, there's also a nugget in that advice that sounds like, do what you want, do what you need to do for you.
Yeah.
But, like, if you do that too much, you know what I mean?
You're going to be a dick.
Yeah.
Well, I think inherently my mountain is hardcore collaboration.
Yeah.
You know, to sound pornographic about it.
Hardcore collaboration, coming to theaters.
Yeah. But, like, I love improvisation on set. I love working with the DP. I love working with the production designer. I love working with producer to come up with a creative solution to things.
Yeah.
So my mountain also includes, like, I do not think that this is me solely making my thing. Another piece of advice, I don't know who said it, but they said, like, the director's job is to get the best group of people together and make sure they make the same project. That's my other philosophy, is that, like, I just want the best, the best actors, the best writers, the best of everybody that I know to come together and make the same project.
Sure.
And that's what my role is. And so I kind of say what that place is, but I want you to bring the coolest fucking most passionate ideas that you want to see be part of this. And like, I'll help make sure that works with the DP or vice versa.
It's such a healthy way to think about it. And I wonder, like, because it just feels like sometimes when you talk to people, because, like, you know, when you're around creative people a lot and people who, like, have a lot of ambition, as, like, we're fortunate enough to, like, be around a lot of those types of people, people who are driven, people who have a voice, people who are moving towards something. But I don't think they always know exactly what that something is.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I want to be somewhere. It's just not here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this isn't, I'm better than this.
Yeah.
Whatever this is. And that follows them as time goes on. You have to have a little of that.
Yeah.
But if it overtakes it, then it's like, then what are you doing it for?
You want to hear a good
story? You can't enjoy it.
A good story along those lines?
Yeah.
So when I first moved to New York, I came to UCB and just like cold emailed Shannon O'Neill and said, I edit videos. And I got looped in, luckily, because they had just been starting to do stuff and they needed somebody. They just handed me a hard drive and said, we need this edited.
Yeah.
It's been sitting on a hard drive for a month. And that's how I got my start here. But then I quickly got hooked up with Chris Gethard. And like Chris has done, like Gethard has done for a lot of people, he's taken people under his wing and like really shepherded them. And I was very lucky and fortunate that I was one of those like seemingly hundreds of others that he's done that with. And it felt great. And I remember one day we were driving out to his place in New Jersey to go film something at his parents' place. And on the way there, and Gethard is, I had him on a pinnacle. Because when I came here, saw Askhat and saw Stepfathers, I was like, that guy, fucking, look at this guy. Comedy, doing all kinds of cool stuff.
Yep.
Felt very, like, honored and privileged to be working with him. And on the way out to the drive, I remember him saying, like, man, I was at ASCAP the other night, and I saw Rob Riggle came in to do the set. And I heard Rob Riggle talking about, like, I don't know what's next. I don't know what to do next. And like, and he's like, man, if Rob Riggle's feeling that way, I'm feeling this way. Like, where am I going to go next? And I'm sitting in the car holding a DVX being like, if Chris Gethard's feeling this way, and Rob Riggle's feeling this way, and I'm looking at Gethard saying, like, you've made it. And he's looking at Riggle and saying, you've made it. I'm like, and I'm sure some other fucking kid in my improv 101 class was like, you're going in a car to go and saying, like, you've made it into the cool kids crowd at UCB because you're going to hang out with Gethard and film his stuff. It never ends. There's this chain of, like, and I'm sure there's somebody that hanging out with Rob Riggle on set of whatever, some Farley Brothers movie and saying, like, what's next? And like, it's this chain and it never ends until you decide that it ends. You know, that's why self-help and therapy books are really good. Then you start to understand like, is that the life I want to live or do I want to live a life that's content? And that's constantly a struggle. I'm not saying I figured it out because I haven't, but
sure.
It's always there.
I can dig it, man. Let's talk about building community. A little bit, because I think the other thing that like is worth raising in this in this medium and as part of this conversation is that like this podcast and honestly like the job that I have now has no value if you don't pour a lot into it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there was no creative director of UCB before Todd Bieber, and like you did a lot to build community here too.
Thanks.
And I think that like You deserve that credit and that public acknowledgement of that.
That's very nice of you. Thank you.
But how much does that philosophy of what you're saying about like building collaboration and building community in the stuff that you did here? Because I think that's the most lasting thing. Projects come, projects go.
Yeah.
But it's like the building of like a community of filmmakers is like something that like has lasting value and like plays out over a course of like, you know, people's, you know, it's like person to person to person to person, just like echoes, it ripples down through. You know what I mean?
I appreciate you saying that. It's very nice of you. It's something that because it's like, it's me, but it's not me, I'm proud of. That happened while I was here. I think when I started, like I said, I cold emailed and said, I edit. mm-hmm. and there was nobody else to edit. And that doesn't mean there's like Eric Capel, there's Mitch McGee, Will Hines dabbled in it.
Yeah.
And there's a million other people that I'm not listing here, but like there's filmmakers at UCB before me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 100% true. What I saw was like I came in filmmaker first, comedy kind of second, and was like, there's nobody here. There's no community to like support the comedy community that exists. And,
yeah.
I worked really hard to try to make what I think improvisers felt first, writers felt second, and filmmakers hopefully are feeling now, which is like, this is, if I want to do comedy filmmaking,
yeah,
this is my first stop.
Yeah.
I graduate college, you know, I maybe am at NYU, but like if I want to do comedy, you come here and you start like dabbling in it at UCB.
Yeah.
And just like improvisers and comedy writers feel like this is the first step on that journey.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty fucking stoked about what's happened there. I think like J.D. Amato was my first intern. These are my first interns. Alex Aiden, J.D. Amato, and Jonathan DeMuth. And I could give a laundry list of who else is on that list, but J.D. is now like he works on Cop Show with Colin Quinn and runs – he directs and show runs – Chris Gethard show.
Yep.
And I had nothing to do with that, but I did have something to do with helping JD find a filmmaking home at UCB, which mm-hmm. then connected him with Gethard and
yeah.
whatever. So I like that was all JD and Chris, and like I had nothing to do with their talent, but I think I do have something to do with like them finding the place. DeMuth is off editing reality shows and doing really well for himself, and Alex Aiden is the head tech at Chelsea Theater right now. And then you've got, like, Zach Goldbaum. He was here for a week. Mm-hmm. Moved to New York City and, like, came in and was an intern. And now has his own Vice show that premiered last night.
Yeah.
He's traveling the world meeting with, like, everybody. Every yeah. major musician. And, like, I think in New York he found his home here. And I don't think that existed in its more formal state, and it existed in an informal state before, but I think it's so exciting, and I hope that other people take advantage of that. And like, it's not me, but I did say like, let's turn this closet into not a place to sort t-shirts, but a place to hold lights and cameras, and then like invite other people to come here and be part of.
Yeah, and I also raised it because I think it's also something that to a lot of the public who see UCB as like as a theater, which is like the predominant way that it is known and functions, and as a school.
Yeah.
But like that as an incubator of filmmaking talent, like I think that it's also not as well known. Something that like I think that you and I are both committed to like shouting about. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But like there is such a community of people who are like, yeah, I want to make comedy films. And this is a place to do it.
Yeah.
And like, for me, this is like the second sort of filmmaking community building project that I've been a part of.
Because when I was at DCTV.
DCTV, and like in the nonprofit space and the documentary space, it was harder because documentary is very isolating in a way. A lot of times, it's intimate. It's about a personal relationship you're having, and over a prolonged period of time. And so you would have these rewarding community building experiences of like, you know, helping somebody along with that process, which is hard, and making it easier and providing them with resources and providing them with like connection to other people that benefited them.
Yeah.
But it pales in comparison to what has been possible here, in part because the format is more immediate in a way.
Yeah.
And in part because the talent base is so overflowing on the performer and writer side that it's like, those opportunities are ready to go. You got people who are like ready to go, but don't have the skill set to actually like create the thing that in the medium that they want to be working in. And so that marriage of those skills is like such a valuable thing for everybody.
I think Amy Poehler has a great thing, and she says, "Find your tribe," right? That's her quote,
yep.
I think. And I really connect with that here. And I think to take it just a hair in a different direction, or to build on that, is to yes and her, as it were.
Yes.
Is to not only find your tribe, but to find the people who are skilled in ways that you are not.
Mm-hmm.
And I think here, I was really lucky because I came in, I knew how to edit, I knew how to shoot, and I knew how to produce something, I knew how to direct something. And I had my, Like, that was a skill set that people at UCB were amazing writers and amazing performers without any of those skill sets. And so it was a symbiotic relationship.
Sure.
Where I got to work with people that I absolutely adored to support what they were doing, and they got to support what I was doing. And
I welcomed that collaboration,
yeah,
too. It wasn't just like, Todd, you push buttons.
No.
It was like, Todd, you have a valuable contribution creatively to this project.
Yeah. There was people who asked me to push buttons.
Sure.
Always. There's always people who ask you to push buttons, but I don't,
but also,
I don't
work
with them.
Work with those people.
Yeah, yeah. I stopped working with those people.
Yeah.
The people who didn't ask me to push buttons and said, what's your idea for this?
Yeah.
Those are the people that I am working with still and like love to work with. And I think similarly, I've probably been the giver of push this button. And those people, skilled people, you know, like to become self-deprecating here a little bit, like I'm sure I'm guilty of that as well.
Sure.
And I've never benefited, like the project's never benefited, I've never benefited, and they've never benefited from that experience. And I don't like to perpetuate that way of working.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. And I think we've covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah.
Like, let me ask this, because it also, like, it also became time for a lot of different reasons. We don't have to go into all of them. It also became time for Todd Bieber, you know, to, after 5-6 years, spread his wings.
Yeah.
Go out into the world, tackle some shit, and he had some good stuff lined up.
Like, yeah,
he said, this documentary was coming to a close and coming to a place of, like, that's taking off. Knock on wood. See how next week goes. Here,
yeah,
we go. It'll be fine. And then, you know, 24 episodes of,
yeah,
a series that you created, ready,
yeah,
to go, produce. That must have been an intense.
Animal Agent, for which will be out on like Above Average and Verizon's Go 90 platform.
Yeah.
24 episodes. We filmed it last week. That was amazing.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So like that stuff's all ready to go, and you're sort of like working on the development of a lot of other projects. Like,
yeah,
for you, in terms of like the of this 2016, the year of Todd spreading his wings, what does that mean? What does that mean to you? And where are the next steps for you, for people who are looking at you and saying, you've made it, Todd, you've made it? You know what I mean? Where are the next steps for you, and sort of like where you're taking yourself?
You know, I think that like the, to go back just like a hair and say like why, there comes a point, I think, when I was at The Onion, I left to become part of UCB.
Yeah.
And now at UCB, I'm leaving to become part of something else. And I think that there is a good time to find your community, and the friends that I made at The Onion and the friends that I made at UCB will last forever. But there also becomes a time within the structure of a
job, yeah,
where you hit like a point where it's like, I'm not finding what I need and the job's not finding what it needs from me. And that, mm-hmm, happened in both those situations, where it was like I said, my job at The Onion was not very creative. It was a little bit creative, but not much. And I gained a lot from it, and I think it gained from me being there, but it was time to go. And I think at UCB, similarly, like UCB can be very consuming. And I think there becomes a point when it makes sense to I'm never not going to be part of UCB. I got the hoodie on. I've got a tattoo, yeah, on my leg. I'm here forever. But at the same time, there's a point where it's like I go into meetings not as UCB comedy, but as me.
Sure.
And I think that that's beneficial to both places,
mm-hmm,
me and UCB. And so I'm excited about this year. I'm excited because, you know, I got to do some digital stuff for Comedy Central. Above Average. I'm headed over to Viceland to work there on a bunch of stuff. I'm excited to be challenged in new ways.
Yeah.
And to contribute in new ways. So, yeah, I don't know. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. And it also feels like, and also knowing you and seeing the way that some of the stuff has gone, it also feels like it's also about bringing that tribe along on that ride too.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, as you know, I've poached your editor from UCB.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I think that like you yeah, no matter where you are, you try and work with the people that you love working,
yeah,
with.
Yeah, no, 100%. This was all a big intervention.
Stop stealing Nate's employees.
No, not at all. And look, I also think that's a good opportunity. Like, as far as like that particular case goes too, that was a good opportunity for him.
Yeah.
And it's like it's a gig based business.
Yeah.
Stuff comes along, you're attracted to it. Like you go, you do it for a while, but it's not the be all end all. Yeah. All this shit ends.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. That's like, I think the most healthy way to approach this business too is like all this stuff ends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like make it the best you can, but not at the sacrifice of knowing that like there's gonna be something else tomorrow.
Yeah.
And ultimately those relationships and that collaborative spirit are way more important than any one particular aspect of this thing.
Yeah.
You know? So even when you're dying on your mountain, it's also like
let's throw a party while we're dying.
Exactly.
Yeah, like and not to I 100% agree with that. It's a tough place to be, and at the end of the day, you still want to be able to go have beers with people.
Yeah,
because you're still human, and that like chances are your web series is going to get seen by a very few amount of people, and or your feature film and documentary.
Sure.
You know, like, but you have to enjoy the process and enjoy who you're doing it with.
Yeah, and you know, and again, in what is a semi-public forum. Thank you for the work that you did here, for everything, for the collaborative spirit that you brought to this place, and for like giving, you know, for helping to grow this community, for the things that, like, you know, speaking for the filmmakers around here, like, thanks for all the work that you did.
Oh, thanks, man.
And continue to do.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. We did the intro, so let's do the outro.
Okay.
Okay, so that's it.
That's it, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you tune in next week when my guest is Nate Russell.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, no. Who's our guest next week?
In 2 weeks, we'll have an episode with Tracy Wigfield.
Oh, yeah. 30 Rock, Mindy Project, and the new...
Untitled Tracy Wigfield Project is, I believe, what they're calling it.
That's great.
She's great.
Yeah, I had 501 with Delaney with her, and she, what an amazing improviser.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And then just your career.
Incredible human being, too.
Yeah.
So that conversation is in 2 weeks. As always, check out YouTube and Vimeo/UCB Comedy for new videos all the time. Connect with us on social media @UCB Comedy. Check out all the podcasts on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, iTunes/UCB Comedy. Until next time, guys, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.